for them.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. officials say that as Russia's war in Ukraine drags on, U.S. security assistance is shifting to a longer-term campaign that will likely keep more American military troops in Europe into the future. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports the U.S. is getting ready to announce another roughly $3 billion in security aid to Ukraine.
While previous aid packages have focused on Ukraine's immediate needs in the fight with Russia, U.S. officials say this one is aimed at a longer-term campaign with money for drones, weapons, and other equipment that may not hit the battlefield for a year or two. They say it's also intended to reassure Ukraine that the U.S. plans to keep up its support for the long term.
That is AP correspondent Sagar Magani reporting. Meanwhile, fear continues to mount in Ukraine that Russia may try to spoil Ukraine's Independence Day holiday and mark the six-month point in the war by intensifying its attacks. Kyiv authorities have banned mass gatherings in the capital through Thursday for fear of Russian missile attacks. Independence Day, like the six-week mark in the war, falls on Wednesday. The national holiday celebrates Ukraine's independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. Over the weekend, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, warned that Russia may try to do something particularly nasty, something particularly cruel this week. The United States planned to announce another large military aid package for Ukraine as a result of all of this. Again, U.S. officials say that as Russia's war on Ukraine drags on, there is a U.S. security aid package to shift to longer-term campaigns that will likely keep more American military troops in Europe into the future. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday is set to announce his long-delayed move on federal student loan forgiveness. More details from AP correspondent Norman Hall.
According to three people familiar with the president's plan, many Americans could see federal student loans up to $10,000 forgiven and a pause on payments to January. Biden has faced pressure from liberals to provide broader relief to hard-hit borrowers, but moderates and Republicans question the fairness of any widespread forgiveness. The precise details of Biden's plans have been kept to an unusually small circle. The plan would likely eliminate student debt entirely for millions of Americans and wipe away at least half for millions more. Norman Hall, Washington.
Najib Razak is Malaysia's first former prime minister to go to prison. A mighty fall for a politician whose father and uncle were also prime ministers. As both finance minister and prime minister, Najib guided his country through the global financial crisis of 2009, abolished draconian colonial-era security laws, and reached out to ethnic minorities. The one MDB financial scandal that brought him down was not just a personal blow, but it also shook the stranglehold his political party had over Malaysian politics. The U.S. Justice Department alleged $4.5 billion was stolen from one MDB and laundered by Najib's associates. He was sentenced to 12 years imprisonment for abuse of power and other crimes for receiving $9.4 million from a former unit of one MDB. The embalmed heart of the emperor who declared Brazil's independence has returned to South American nation for ceremonies worthy of a head of a state as the nation prepares to celebrate its bicentennial. The heart of Pedro I is now contained in a golden reliquary that derived from Portugal in a Brazilian Air Force plane. It was carried up the ramp of the presidential palace in Brasilia on Tuesday and aligned with procedures afforded to visiting leaders on official state visits. Pfizer says its COVID-19 vaccine was 73% effective in protecting children younger than five as Omicron spread in the spring. Vaccinations for babies, toddlers, and preschoolers opened in the U.S. in June after months of delay. Only about 6% of youngsters ages 6 months through 4 years had gotten at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine by mid-August. Health authorities authorized tot-size vaccine doses by Pfizer and BioNTech based on a study showing they were safe and produced high levels of virus-fighting antibodies. Now, the new update analyzed COVID-19 diagnosis between March and June in Pfizer's ongoing study of a three-dose vaccine. Recapping our top story, U.S. officials say that Russia's war on Ukraine drags on, U.S. security assistance is shifting to longer-term campaigns. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, August 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chino Dufo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. to announce an additional $3 billion in aid to Ukraine as Kyiv marks Independence Day amid intense Russian bombardment.
Today, it was an official report, and they say that Russian forces are accumulating equipment on the territory of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant and has increased the number of troops at the station.
The World Food Program warns of growing threat of famine in the Horn of Africa.
Dunford says the specter of the 2011 famine in Somalia, which killed 250,000 people, half of them children, looms large over this current crisis.
And former German Chancellor Angela Merkel awarded UNESCO 2022 Peace Prize. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. security assistance is shifting to a longer-term campaign that will likely keep more American troops in Europe, including imminent plans to announce an additional roughly $3 billion in aid to train and equip Ukrainian forces. U.S. officials told the Associated Press that the package is expected to be announced Wednesday, the day the war marks the sixth anniversary and Ukraine celebrates its Independence Day. This, as Ukraine's military said Tuesday, the Russian forces carried out fresh artillery and airstrikes in the Zaporizhzhia region, where fighting has raised concerns about safety near Europe's largest nuclear power plant. From Kyiv, reporter Anna Shanikova updates Flashpoint Ukraine's host Steve Miller on the fighting and how people in Kyiv are preparing to mark the occasion.
Today, it was an official report, and they say that Russian forces are accumulating equipment on the territory of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant and has increased the number of troops at the station. According to their report, there are in total more than 40 units of military equipment, which is now located on the territory of the station. Also, there are 16 military vehicles near the first power unit, 7 near the second one. Russian forces also brought 12 pieces of equipment under the overpass. And it was also mentioned in their report that Russian forces have added a considerable number of soldiers on the territory of the plant.
Here we are on August 23rd, Tuesday. It's Ukrainians' Flag Day. And on Wednesday, the 24th, is Independence Day. It's the country's 31st Independence Day. And I was wondering what you're seeing there in Kyiv in terms of how people are celebrating today, because there have been numerous warnings, not only from the United States intelligence community, but also from Ukrainian officials, that there could be a possibility of Russian activity. And there's some warnings going out in terms of trying to get people not to aggregate in large groups. So how are people marking this occasion?
This is actually true. People are really informed, and people were informing for the past weeks that these 2 days, and especially tomorrow, August 24th, pretty much under the highest risk of massive missile attacks. And I can say that a lot of citizens of Kyiv have left Kyiv to the countryside areas, for instance. So if you look today around the city, there are much less cars, and a lot of people, especially people with children, are trying to spend these days in the countryside or out of Kyiv, as also was recommended by a lot of governmental officials. Again, it's no panic in Kyiv, so I cannot say that people are actually panicking, but people are on the alarm, this is for sure. People understand that there is a high risk, and everyone getting ready for tomorrow in particular, and people, at least this is, you know, what is planned and what government is asking for, will probably be more attentive to air raid sirens. The main event probably, which is actually happening, even it is online event, but it is a Crimean platform. It's second time that this event is happening, and a lot of high gas participating in this event.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine host Steve Miller. The UN Human Rights Office says Russia and its armed allies in Ukraine's Donetsk region are planning to put Ukrainian prisoners of war on trial, which could amount to a war crime. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The trials reportedly could take place in coming days in Ukraine's port city of Mariupol. The UN Rights Agency expressed concern that POWs charged with a crime will not receive due process and guarantees of a fair trial to which they are entitled. UN Human Rights Spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says under international law, POWs have combatant immunity. She says they cannot be prosecuted for having participated in hostilities or for having committed lawful acts during an armed conflict.
No sentence or punishment may be passed on them unless it is delivered by an impartial and regularly constituted court. We recall that international humanitarian law prohibits the establishment of courts solely to judge prisoners of war, and that willfully depriving a prisoner of war of the rights of fair and regular trial amounts to a war crime.
Shamdasani calls Russian authorities' refusal to grant independent monitors confidential access to prisoners of war very worrying. She says that leaves POWs open to torture to extract confessions from them.
And of course, we're very concerned that there are these photos and video footage that are emerging of cages being built in Mariupol's Philharmonic Hall to put on show these prisoners of war, which is, of course, humiliating as well.
She says the construction of cages, coupled with inflammatory public statements by high-level Russian officials and members of affiliated armed groups, are also cause for concern. She says statements labeling Ukrainian POWs war criminals, Nazis, and terrorists undermine the presumption of innocence before trials have taken place. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tension is rising in Pakistan following terrorism charges slammed on main opposition leader and former Prime Minister Imran Khan by the police. The charges come after a speech Khan gave in Islamabad over the weekend, in which he vowed to sue police officers and a female judge and alleged that a close aide had been tortured after his arrest. The party said a court in Islamabad has issued a so-called, quote, protective bail, unquote, for Khan for the next 3 days, preventing police from arresting him over the charges. Meanwhile, supporters rallied outside his home as the charges escalated political tensions in this nuclear-armed nation. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gal.
He has until Thursday that he has to meet certain legal requirements. He can get a pre-arrest bail from an anti-terrorism court because he's facing terrorism charges. And it's very difficult to be a free man once you are charged with terrorism under anti-terror law in Pakistan. So we will know exactly what will be his fate on Thursday, because the government has indicated that once the Thursday deadline expires and he's unable to get a pre-arrest bail from the anti-terrorism court, then he will be arrested. This is what the interior minister said.
This sets up some kind of a confrontation between his supporters and his party, who are accusing the government of just trying to force him to stop holding these rallies by trumping up terrorism charges against him.
There was a hint of him being arrested 2 days ago, and we saw that thousands of people took to the streets in major cities across Pakistan, and also thousands of people rushed to his residence just outside Islamabad and created sort of a human barrier for the police in case they tried to arrest him. And apparently that kind of wild reaction with so many people present in that place deterred the police from taking Imran Khan into custody. But then the next morning, when the court gave Imran Khan a 3-day protective bail, then this crowd dispersed. But the leaders, while addressing these huge crowds, whether in Islamabad or other parts of Pakistan, clearly vowed that if Imran Khan is arrested, they will march on Islamabad. And in fact, one of the leaders who was a minister in former Prime Minister Khan's cabinet threatened that his party workers will take over Islamabad. So definitely the situation, political situation, is very tense. And the kind of support Imran Khan has generated ever since he was ousted from power in April, and his anti-government rallies have drawn tens of thousands of people. So how the government will handle the situation in case he's arrested and we see this kind of a backlash from his supporters is yet to be seen. But obviously, everybody is speculating and expecting some kind of a huge showdown if Imran Khan is arrested later this week, which the government has indicated it might do so.
Has the government presented any evidence of terrorism against him? Because this, according to analysts, is a very serious charge, is it not?
They are serious charges, but they are also ridiculous charges in this case, because Imran Khan has been charged under anti-terrorism law for saying at a public rally on Saturday that because one of his close advisors has been arrested recently and even allegedly sexually abused while in police custody, government has claimed that because this was a threat to police and judicial officers, so that is why they have booked him under anti-terrorism law. The problem in Pakistan is that this law was introduced back in the 1990s to discourage or counter extremism or extremist violence in Pakistan. But this law, rather than being used to effectively counter the religious violence, has been repeatedly used by successive governments to intimidate political opponents and even journalists or critics.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gaur speaking with me from Islamabad. Amid positive signals surrounding nuclear talks among Iran and Western nations, both the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait have quietly restored diplomatic ties with Tehran. Iran's foreign ministry indicated Monday that talks with Saudi Arabia over resuming ties are also going in a positive direction. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
As the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait quietly resumed diplomatic ties with Iran over the weekend, eyes are focused on the bigger prize of a diplomatic rapprochement between Tehran and its longtime nemesis, Riyadh. Ties between Iran and both the UAE and Saudi Arabia were cut in 2016 following the execution of Saudi Shiite cleric Nimr al-Nimr. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani told journalists Monday that the positive regional climate is bolstering optimism over the possible resumption of diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia. Both Iraq and Oman have helped broker unofficial talks between Tehran and Riyadh. Kanani says that Iran has made efforts to improve ties with Saudi Arabia and has seen reciprocal steps from the Saudi side. We are optimistic, he says, that the positive regional atmosphere is fostering the path of communication and dialogue and ultimately better relations. Kanani went on to say that serious differences and thorny issues still divide Tehran and Riyadh, but that positive steps have been taken on the negotiating track. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that the nuclear talks in Vienna have created a positive regional atmosphere that is contributing to improved relations between Iran and former adversaries Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Abu Diab argues that despite several attacks by Iran's Houthi allies on the UAE, trade ties between the Emirates and Iran were never broken, and a good neighbor policy still prevails. Washington-based Gulf analyst Theodore Karasik tells VOA that both the restoration of diplomatic ties between the UAE and Iran is important in the current changing strategic environment. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In other news, UNESCO on Tuesday awarded a 2022 Peace Prize to former German Chancellor Angela Merkel in recognition of her efforts to welcome refugees. According to the UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization's Twitter and website, the jury of the Felix Humphrey-Boigny UNESCO Peace Prize awarded the prize to Merkel for what it called, quote, her courageous decision in 2015 to welcome more than 1.5 million refugees, notably from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan and Eritrea. Merkel stepped down from power in 2021 after 16 years at Germany's helm. More than any other topic, the refugee crisis dominated her third term, proving popular with some and unwelcome to others, and continues to have repercussions today. In 2015, as a result of wars in the Middle East, particularly in Syria, Afghanistan and Iraq, a surge of people fleeing converged on Europe's borders. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofo in Washington. UN agencies warn that severe hunger is sliding towards famine-like conditions in the Horn of Africa, particularly in Somalia. This as 4 years of consecutive drought have wiped out people's ability to grow the crops they need to feed themselves. Lisa Schlein again reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Programme reports up to 22 million people in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia are facing severe hunger. It says hunger and the death of millions of livestock have forced more than 7 million people to leave their homes in search of food, water, and grazing pasture for their cattle. The WFP warns these figures are likely to grow and conditions will continue to deteriorate as poor rainfall is forecast for the fifth year in a row. The WFP Regional Director for East Africa, Michael Dunford, recently returned from a visit to Somalia and northern Kenya. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Dunford says he was particularly struck by the dire situation in Somalia, where more than 7 million people are facing a humanitarian crisis. He says this is the worst situation he has seen in the 21 years he has been working for WFP.
We have a real risk of famine. It hasn't been declared yet, but already there are over 200,000 people in famine-like conditions, catastrophic levels of food insecurity, with another 1.4 on the edge. So unless we are able to continue to advocate, to raise funding, to scale up our operations, then we will have, I fear, a famine to deal with.
Dunford says the specter of the 2011 famine in Somalia, which killed 250,000 people, half of them children, looms large over this current crisis. He says WFP is scaling up to reach 8.5 million people across Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. He says $416 million is needed to provide life-saving aid for the rest of the year. Malnutrition remains high across the Horn of Africa. The UN Children's Fund reports 10 million children under the age of 5 are acutely malnourished. It adds that nearly 1.8 million face severe wasting, a condition that is life-threatening. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Turkey, a strong supporter of the Syrian opposition, is indicating that it could now be ready for talks with the Damascus regime. Ankara severed its diplomatic ties with the Assad government at the start of the civil war, but is now looking to return millions of Syrian refugees. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Referring to the nation's relations with the Syrian regime, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan recently told reporters political dialogue and diplomacy cannot be cut off between states. Early this month, Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu revealed he recently held talks with his Syrian counterpart. Çavuşoğlu said he had a brief chat with the Syrian Foreign Minister on the sidelines of a meeting, adding that he told the top Syrian diplomat that Turkey believes there will be peace between the Assad regime and the opposition. The Turkish Foreign Minister said Turkey is ready to help in such circumstances. Ankara severed diplomatic ties with Damascus at the onset of the civil war, and until recently, Erdogan was among the staunchest critics of the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad. Syrian rebels angrily protested, burning Turkish flags, as they got news of the discussion between the Turkish and Syrian foreign ministers. Galip Dalai, a Turkey analyst at Chatham House, says the Syrian rebels have good reason to be concerned, since the Turkish government has been among their strongest military and political backers.
Terrible news for the Syrian opposition in Turkey. Because, you know, the trouble that they were facing, they already turned more and more into Turkish proxies. And now basically that will be a nail in the coffin of Syrian opposition. But some of the groups, there might be also the decoupling between Turkey and some of the Syrian opposition groups.
Analysts say Erdogan could be looking for rapprochement with Damascus to get rid of Syrian Kurdish forces of the YPG from its border. Ankara accuses the YPG of having links to an insurgency inside Turkey. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
This is Science in a Minute. Around 66 million years ago, nearly three-quarters of the world's plant and animal species, including the dinosaurs, were destroyed in what is called the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event. Many scientists agree the cause of this disaster was the result of the 10-kilometer-wide Chicxulub asteroid that crashed into what is now Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. A new study published in the journal Science Advances proposes there may have been more than one asteroid that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs. Study authors say they found proof of an 8.5-kilometer-wide asteroid impact crater buried some 300 to 400 meters beneath the Atlantic Ocean, about 400 kilometers from the coast of Guinea in West Africa. The study suggests the crater was created by a 400-meter-wide asteroid that smashed into Earth around the same time as the Chicxulub asteroid impact. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the latest developments regarding the FBI investigation of former U.S. President Donald Trump. His lawyers asked a federal court to temporarily block the agency from reviewing documents recovered from his Florida estate. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than five decades ago, at the height of the Cold War, representatives of 18 nations drafted the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or NPT. In the years that followed, nearly every country in the world joined the NPT. The NPT has made the world safer as nuclear weapons states took steps to reduce their stockpiles. However, the treaty is under increasing strain, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a speech to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference. He noted that the DPRK continues to expand its unlawful nuclear program and continues its ongoing provocations against the region. Iran also remains on a path of nuclear escalation. Although it publicly claims to favor a return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, since March, Iran has been unwilling to accept such a deal. Secretary Blinken affirmed that getting back to the JCPOA remains the best outcome for the United States, for Iran, for the world. Russia's ongoing war of aggression against Ukraine is a brazen violation of international law, but its actions also violate the assurances that it provided to Ukraine in the 1994 Budapest Memorandum. Under the terms of the memorandum, which welcomed Ukraine's accession to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and its commitment to remove all nuclear weapons from its territory, Russia committed to respect Ukraine's independence and territorial integrity. This sends the worst possible message to countries around the world that may think they need to have nuclear weapons to protect their sovereignty. There is no place in our world for nuclear deterrence based on coercion, intimidation, or blackmail, declared Secretary Blinken.
Together with the United Kingdom and France, we've released a set of principles and best practices that should be expected of every responsible NPT nuclear weapon state, among them that every effort has to be made to ensure that nuclear weapons are not used again.
The United States is committed to avoiding costly arms races and facilitating arms control arrangements wherever they are possible. Indeed, President Biden negotiated to extend the New START treaty with Russia until 2026. President Biden also reiterated his readiness to negotiate a framework to replace New START. The fundamental role of U.S. nuclear weapons is to deter nuclear attacks on the United States, its allies, and partners. The United States would only consider the use of such weapons in extreme circumstances to defend its vital interests.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.